ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 9, Text Number 16. And the title of the chapter is, Brahma's Prayers for Creative Energy. It's a long chapter. He's like praying a lot, creative energy. the series of verses, he's seeing the personality of Godhead face to face and offering prayers. And he's feeling this, what Prabhupada calls creative impetus. Just like, you know, we might have a creative impetus. We want to do something. We want to create something, like, you know, something. He's got a big time. He wants to create a universe. And he's seeing that he doesn't feel the capacity to do that. Although the Lord has given him the endowed energy, he's feeling insufficient. So he's praying to the Lord. His prayers are going in the direction of seeking empowerment to do that which is his daily duty. You know, ours is a smaller scale daily duty. His is a bigger scale daily duty. But this is his sadhana, his daily morning. Get up in the morning and pray to the Lord for the ability to do his duty properly. He's also very intelligent. We discussed this, you know, series of verses, but his body is of intelligence. His capacity is extremely intelligent, shown in many ways. So he knows very well what it is that he's going to be creating. He's going to create a situation where the rebellious living entities are going to suffer, make a prison house, and it's not pleasant. So what's the opportunity for those living entities that are in that situation to get reprieve? Not just dig a tunnel and get out, but change, rectify that which is the cause of their suffering. And he knows the solution, so he's already stated, we just covered yesterday, what the solution is. By remembrance of the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, who in his incarnations performs wonderful activities, what we heard yesterday, as if he is an actor on a stage playing the part of an ordinary person. Although he's the transcendental Lord, by calling those names of that Supreme Personality and Godhead, one is cleansed of all that entanglement in material existence and can be restored. So he knows the cure. He's looking for the potency to transmit that cure to others. So in this verse, he's addressing the Lord as the root of all material existence, the root of all existence, spiritual and material, but specifically because of his service of creation, the root of the material creation, the root cause. And, well, I'll read the verse. Your Lordship is the prime root of the tree of the planetary systems. So that's what he's involved with, planetary systems, setting it up. You're the root. This tree has grown by first penetrating the material nature in three trunks as me, Shiva, and you, the Almighty, for creation, maintenance, and dissolution. And we three have grown with many branches. Therefore, I offer my obeisances unto you, the tree of the cosmic manifestation. And the very interesting purport by Srila Prabhupada. The cosmic manifestation is grossly divided into three worlds, upper, middle, and lower planetary systems. And then it broadens into the cosmos of 14 planetary systems with the manifestation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the Supreme Root. Material nature, which appears to be the cause of the cosmic manifestation, is only the agency or energy of the Lord. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 9.10. Maya dyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. And here's a very interesting translation of that verse. Not what you'll find in Bhagavad Gita as it is, but it suits. Quote, only under the superintendence of the Supreme Lord does material nature appear to be the cause of the creation, maintenance, and dissolution, unquote. So he's emphasizing a particular point. Krishna is behind it. So the appearance is material nature is everything, but check it out, Krishna is behind it. Maya dyakshena prakriti. Then, the Lord expands himself into three, Vishnu, Brahma, and Shiva, for maintenance, creation, and destruction, respectively. Of the three principal agents controlling the three modes of material nature, Vishnu is the Almighty. That's found in the translation above, the Almighty. That's kind of like a universal idea of God is the Almighty. Like who he is, we don't know, but he's almighty. So the Sanskrit word in the verse is vibhu, in contrast to anu. He's vibhu. We're, just so it's clear, we're anu, and he's vibhu. And Brahma is saying, Lord Shiva and I, we're in this small category, he's in the vibhu category. Even though he Vibhu, Vishnu, is within material nature for the purpose of maintenance, he is not controlled by the laws of material nature. The other two, Brahma and Shiva, although almost as greatly powerful as Vishnu, are within the control of the material energy of the Supreme Lord. The conception of many gods controlling the many departments of material nature is ill-conceived by the foolish pantheist. We'll come back to the pantheism notion. God is one without a second, and he is the primal cause of all causes. As there are many departmental heads of governmental affairs, so there are many heads of management of the universal affairs. Paragraph. One of Prabhupada's favorite phrases. Due to a poor fund of knowledge, the impersonalist does not believe in the personal management of things as they are. But in this verse it is clearly explained that everything is personal and nothing is impersonal. He's just, Supreme Court just made his ruling. We have already discussed this point in the introduction. This is Canto 3, he's referring to the introduction of the whole Bhagavatam. And it is confirmed here in this verse. The tree of the material manifestation is described in the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita as a Ashvata, tree whose root is upward. We have actual experience of such a tree when we see the shadow of a tree on the bank of a reservoir of water. The reflection of the tree on the water appears to hang down from its upward roots. The tree of creation described here is only a shadow of the reality, which is Parabrahman Vishnu. In the internal potential manifestation of Vaikuntha Lokas, the actual tree exists. And the tree reflected in material nature is only the shadow of this actual tree. The impersonalist's theory that Brahman is void of all variegatedness is false, because the shadow tree described in the Bhagavad Gita cannot exist without being the reflection of a real tree. The real tree is situated in the eternal existence of spiritual nature, full of transcendental varieties. And Lord Vishnu is the root of that tree also. The root is the same, the Lord, both for the real tree and the false, but the false tree is only the perverted reflection of the real tree, the Lord. Being the real tree is here offered obeisances by Brahma on his own behalf and also on behalf of Lord Shiva. They're God brothers. They have the same Lord and Master. So he's on his behalf offering obeisances. So the concepts that are presented here are really important. Just first a little comment that the messages that are embedded in Srimad Bhagavatam are not some abstract, aloof, irrelevant, interesting maybe, but not having any practical application to our lives, because it's not so, because quoting Sadaputta, the way we see the world is the way we see ourselves. And if we see the world as, you know, however we see it, like say supposing it's unreal, or supposing it's up for grabs, or however we see the world is how we're going to see ourselves, and you know, the way in which we conduct our lives. And just take something that everybody that in our compulsory education system has to go through is science class. And everyone hears the same thing. And like systematically paid for by the taxpayers, mandatory, you have to get atheism. Like, you know, spoonfuls. And if you want to get an A in your exam, you have to give it back. And what is it? All there is nature. That's all there is. It's all there is. Oh, but there's laws of nature. Laws governing nature, and that's all there is. Everything can be explained on that basis. You want an A in the exam? Better learn it, because that's the program. And it impacts people. It impacts how we view the world. Although we have our little, you know, however strong it is, some idea of, no, it's not like that. You don't get A's in exams for saying it's not like that. So it's you know, it's swimming upstream. The current is moving rapidly the other direction. And there's so much regard and esteem and respect that goes to the scientists, because my goodness, look what they're providing. They're providing air conditioning when it works. By the way, the air conditioning unit isn't working. But and technology, and you know, we can like text people. We can, you know, see so many. I'm noticing more and more. I was sharing this with one devotee on the airplane, because I travel on airplanes a lot. Everybody's got a thing, an electronic something. It's an electronic book, or it's like, you know, they're listening to music and they're going boom, 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 boom. Or they got like three of them going at one time. I was, you know, one guy was really like, he had all the toys and he was showing the guy next to him all the toys he had. And it was like a kid showing how to use this, you know, this thing, that program. And, you know, I was watching movies, sitting, you know, everyone's doing, they're wired to like this. And science and technology is, you know, moving us forward. It's degradation away from God is happening at a rapid pace. Advancement. And we're just kind of like going along for the ride. And, you know, what's behind it is there's only one thing. It's matter and the laws governing matter. Although there may be some certainly theistic people in that group, but science doesn't see it that way. So what's behind it? And what does that give to the quality of life? Or how we use the technology that's provided to us by science? Or just the everyday, you know, citizen? I'm having this very interesting ongoing dialogue with a Chinese student. And they don't get that there's a person. Like, I just had a partial discussion with them while I was here and on the phone. And like, one of the reasons, there's two reasons that they presented why they don't accept that God can be a person. The reason is, I've shared this previously, but it's a classic. It's, here is the world of duality from the Chinese conception, yin and yang, and there's this and there's that, and that's this world, and there's another reality. Okay, that's good. There's another reality. That other reality has to be devoid of yin and yang, because otherwise it's just like yin and yang. It's just, you know, it's just another one of these. So you can't have another one of these. As soon as you have God with a form and God as a person, then it's part of this place. So God, or whatever, the Supreme, has to be like supreme existence. It's without form, without personality, without qualities. Now, they didn't study Shayurak Bhashya by Shankaracharya, but it's just like their intuition tells them that. And then the other is, I found this one very interesting. If there's God as a person, persons aren't alone, so there's other persons where God is, and so how can those persons also be God? I went through it and said, well, you know, God can expand. He can expand this material. He can expand the spiritual. And this, because he expands the spiritual, doesn't mean that each of those parts are the source. There's one source. Like this verse is saying, it's one root. But, you know, this individual was having a hard time getting it. It's not like they weren't arguing. They just like, you know, they had another conception. They were used to that conception, comfortable and familiar with that conception. So God's not a person. Then the pantheism one that's mentioned here in this purport. At one of our home programs, one nice Indian lady came up and, you know, I've got a different Ishtadev than Krishna. Is that okay? And then it turns out, you know, part of her conviction is this pantheism conviction that says, well, you know, there's scriptural, Bhagavad Gita says that Krishna is the source of everything and he creates and all that, but there's other parts of the scripture that says that Shakti creates and all that. I said, that's fine. Our scripture says the same thing. Srishti, Stiti, Pralaya, Sadhana, Shaktireka, Chayeva Yasha Bhavanani Vivarti Durga. She does those things. Srishti, Stiti. Same as mentioned here. So it's like, is it double talk? Is it her or is it Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva? She's acting as an agency of them in different capacities by different names. You get the name straight, then it helps, but it's Shakti. But Shakti has Shaktiman. So just like, you know, she didn't get it. Because when you have a prior conception of something, it's and maybe, so back to the initial, maybe it's just abstract, you know, that's a nice discussion, but it really doesn't impact the quality of your life. It does impact the quality of your life because you're in the internal, the external energy, and if you're in the external energy, you're moved by what the previous verses were describing by Lord Brahma. There's the Nishkam Bhaktas, the Sakam demigods, the Sakam living entities, those who engage in rituals, ultimately for the sacrifice of Vishnu, and then there's people that engage in rituals without the sacrifice of Vishnu, and then they're just, you know, like hardcore atheists. These are all people that are populating the creation that he's going to make. He knows their levels. And he's lamenting for the misfortune of those that miss this opportunity because they're suffering. It's that the practical thing is they're suffering. As simple as it is of, you know, what conception you have. Even, you know, same activity. Do the same, just like live your life the way that you live it. Depending upon the conception, the quality of life is going to be different. The character or the absence of character. Like the presentation that I made on Sunday, this, the character, the quality of compassion. Without compassion, it's emptiness. And how do you teach compassion in a godless education system? Answer, you can't. And what's the quality of life like? It's horrible. But you know, it's continuing to ramp up. Education, teach people technology, how to get ahead and get tools and toys and without character. It's dangerous. It's a dangerous civilization. Put something very powerful in the hands of a person that doesn't have character. What's going to be the result? Keep your doors locked. Look out, duck, when, you know, the stuff goes flying. Because it's a dangerous place. And just interpersonal interactions, they're unpleasant, you know, it affects the quality of our life. Or what contribution are we making to the quality of life? It's not just an abstract thing. What's the conception? Or it's not a competition that I've got a better conception than you do, and we're competing over who's got the better conception. That's not the program. The program is what's reality and connect with reality. And the verse of Brahma is in the second canto, after Lord Vishnu appears before Lord Brahma. It's really like you make a great movie. He's sitting on a lotus in this darkness in all directions, and he's doing his tapa, and suddenly the whole spiritual world manifests right before him. And he gets up off of his lotus flower and comes before the Supreme Lord, and they have this wonderful exchange with one another, and Lord Vishnu says, "You pleased me very much. Please ask some benediction." So Brahma is very intelligent. He asks for two. He asked several questions. Please supply me the answer to these questions. But he also, the second request was, please protect me from the false ego of thinking that I'm the creator of this universe, which I'm going to be the creator of. Please protect me from the false ego of thinking that way. So, in essence, that's what he's doing here also, because he's saying, you're the Supreme Lord. You're the root of the tree of this existence, which I'm going to be the creator of, but actually my ability to create is coming from you're the root. I'm just part of the tree. You're the root. And so, two other things. there's the material tree and then the spiritual tree, and Lord Vishnu is the root of both. We'll just do the material tree part. Where Prabhupada goes with this in the purport is 9th chapter Bhagavad Gita, text 10, most confidential knowledge, Maya Adhyakshena Prakriti. So the normal translation is Adhyakshena, under my direction, the material energy is moving or not moving. And it doesn't have to, like the verse yesterday, Govardhan Hill, he doesn't have to lift Govardhan Hill. He can just will millions of Govardhan Hills to come into existence or to rise or to fall or whatever he wants, and he doesn't have to lift even his left hand, even his little pinky. He just has to will it. So he may lift the Govardhan Hill, but it's a lila. He's behaving like one of us, although he's not one of us. It's by his... He's Shaktiman, and his Shaktis are doing everything. So, by willing material nature into existence, because that's been described in the previous chapters, Lord Vishnu is willing material existence to come into being, because the time energy says it's time for it, and it's time energy is his energy, and so material energy manifests, including Lord Brahma, and all the other details that get really complex, but the principle that's behind it is the Supreme Lord. So both the creation, the maintenance, and the dissolution, it's all under the direction of Prakriti, which is under the direction of Krishna. Now, just to appreciate that point a little bit more. The previous verse yesterday was 4:14 Bhagavad Gita. Namam karmani limpati name karma pale spraha. Where Krishna is describing in 4:13 that he creates the varnashram system, chatur varnamaya shrishtam shrishti, he creates maya shrishtam, he creates by his potency guna karma vibhakasha, the varnashram system, or at least specifically the varna system, but the varnashram system, he creates it. And then he says, yet I'm the non-doer, I do it but I don't do it. Like, come on. Do you do it or you don't do it? But this is double talk. It's not double talk. He's the remote doer, and there's the immediate doer. And the immediate doer is material nature. And then in this namam karmani limpanti, whatever it is that he does, he's not implicated by that. We are implicated by that when we do something, the laws of karma. But one who just understands, he says in that verse, one who understands this nature of mine, they also will not be implicated in the reactions of their work. So it's important to have the right conception of Krishna, like how are things happening? Krishna is remote, his energies are acting, agents of his energies are also acting. Like pantheism is mentioned in the verse. So look up in the dictionary. Well, don't look up in the dictionary. When you think of pantheism, what do you think of? What does the term mean?
Everything is one.
Pantheism.
Multiple
gods. Like the pantheism of gods. So like Hinduism, many gods. So Prabhupada is saying it very clearly here in the purport. The conception of many gods controlling the many departments of material nature. That's the conception. You know, it's like generic. That's the brand. Many gods controlling material nature. But you look up in the dictionary, and what does pantheism means is material nature, or nature is supreme. So nature is supreme, there's God's controlling nature, but it's nature is supreme, and the personal existence of God, the supreme God, is missing. But whether it's nature is supreme, which is what science says, that, you know, all there is nature. There isn't anything else. Don't talk about spirit, don't talk about mind, don't talk about anything like that. That's silly. There's only one thing. We can explain everything. Nature and the laws governing nature, and there's nothing else. So pantheism is that. There's nature, and we worship nature. So it's Shakti worship, or just worship nature, because, you know, like, just not just nature lovers, but worship nature and the many gods that control nature. Like, you know, God just, Krishna just, like, got deleted. And there's a consequence for that. Brahma has described. It's suffering. You know, continuing existence in the prison house of material existence, birth after birth. That's the consequence. Even it may, you know, go to the heavenly region, then fall down again. Jine punya marcha logam ashanti. It's not, it's robbing, it's stealing, it's depriving the living entity of their natural capacity. Therefore, kaitava dharma. Although dharma, it's kaitava, it's cheating the living entity from that potential of being restored to their loving relationship with Krishna. There's practical consequences of not having a clear conception. To get a clear conception in the midst of all this cacophony of different conceptions, you know, you have to have a steady mind. It's like too much. Pantheism, polytheism, impersonalism, that's the next paragraph, impersonalism. So beyond that, beyond this material nature and the, you know, this tree of material nature, just cut the tree and you get into nothingness. Impersonalism or voidism, take your pick. Without the association of scriptures and those that are receiving that knowledge in proper descending line. These are things we've heard over and over again, but it's like there's a reason we hear it over and over again, because we don't get the right conception, so we have to hear it over and over again. We're buffeted by the winds of conceptions that are out there, and, you know, we have a tendency to doubt the spiritual conception. So we need to hear it again and again. Hear it, understand it from different perspectives. So it's very, very clear. It sits in our heart and it's compelling. I mean, hearing it once is actually sufficient, but we're just conditioned. We need to hear it again and again from different angles. So it seems, even if one just takes certain verses from Bhagavad Gita without the context of the whole Bhagavad Gita, it may seem like Krishna is speaking pantheism also. Just leave certain verses out and take certain verses. There's a nice verse in the fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita where he seems to say all there is material nature. The kartritvam the karmani lokasya srijate prabho. Na karma pala samyogam svabhavas tu pravartate. The embodied spirit, master of the city of his body, does not create activities, does not induce people to act, and does not create the fruits of action. All this is enacted by the modes of material nature. So we're just going along for the ride, thinking I'm doing this and I'm causing that and I'm inducing others to do that. And that's, we're just in Maya, and everything's being conducted by material nature. So it looks like that's all there is material nature. So worship material nature, be a pantheist or a nice Hindu, demigod polytheistic worshiper, and you're fine. Looks like. But that's an incomplete picture. It's while that is material nature is doing all these things, nature is under some direction. And that's what Brahma is saying. I'm doing so many things, but I'm one of those, the lords of material nature, and I'm under someone's direction. You're the root, and I'm not going to forget it, and I'm worshiping you. And Lord Shiva by my side here is also worshiping you for that reason. And then the last paragraph is impersonalism. And again, this isn't just some abstract. This is like pervasive. This is the tendency towards impersonalism is pervasive. As fruitive intention, fruitive disposition, working to achieve something, like that question the other evening where, you know, this man was stuck about, you know, which is better, to forgive or to win? He just like, he didn't like the idea of accepting that, let Krishna win. And that's the best. Fruitive intention is very strong, even bringing that into the realm of spiritual practice. I want to achieve something, accomplish something, and be the enjoyer of something, and be recognized for something. Point you made yesterday. Fruitive intention is very strong. Impersonal tendency is also very strong. The root of it is, I don't want to have to be accountable to someone, ultimate supreme someone. I don't want that. But I'm not in that position, so it's just like impersonal. I'm not accountable. I don't have to have a personal relationship. Because when I have a personal relationship, I'm accountable. And even it doesn't have to be, you know, the Almighty God. It can be a friend or a spouse or, you know, someone that's close to you. Don't be accountable. Become a member of the Hare Krishna movement and don't be accountable. I'm answerable to myself. Just ask me. We have someone above us. It's natural. It's reality with a capital R. That's what it is. So impersonal tendency is strong. It's a rebellious spirit. And what Prabhupada does in that paragraph is explain that not only is Vishnu the root of the material creation, but Vishnu is the root of the spiritual. And he does it by entering into the 15th chapter example of the tree with the roots growing up and the branches growing down. As that tree, that's the reflection upon material nature, or even more specifically, reflection upon the mind, because if the mind was purified or spiritualized, one could see the original tree, but the original tree has its root also. The original tree has its root in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just the reflection of the tree on the water appears to hang down from its upward roots. The tree of creation described here is only the shadow of the reality which is Parabrahman Vishnu. The internal potency, in the internal potential manifestation of the Vaikuntha Lokas, the actual tree exists. To have a reflection, you have to have something it's a reflection of. The actual tree exists. That's the personality of God at the source of it. The impersonalist theory that Brahman is void of variegatedness is false, because the shadow tree described in Bhagavad Gita cannot exist without it being the reflection of the real tree. The real tree is situated in the eternal existence of spiritual nature, full of transcendental varieties. And Lord Vishnu is the root of that tree also. And therefore, Brahma, knowing this, because he's very intelligent and wants to be able to carry out his service properly, like we should want to carry out our service properly, he wants to be protected from the illusion and the false pride of I am the doer, I am the creator, and therefore I am the enjoyer. By the way, follows like dominoes, boom, boom. I create something, I'm the enjoyer of that something. Why did I create it? Anyway, so I can enjoy it. And I did it. I may have taken some help from my friends, but I did it. And so I'm the enjoyer of it, naturally so. He wants protection from that. And the unadulterated, unfiltered, untainted creative potency, that's his prayers. And how we can benefit from it is not so how we can create a universe when it's our turn, but how we can do our daily service free from that misconception. I'm the doer, I'm the creator, I'm the enjoyer. We're part of the tree, the same tree that Brahma is part of, and following our superior, Lord Brahma, we should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he's helping us to like stay on track, be really clear why we're doing that, not just sentiment, but very clear why, who, and what. Stay fixed and continue to pray to stay fixed also. Whatever state of qualification we may somehow gather together or be blessed by Krishna to have some capacity to do something, stay always in that humble mood of service, looking to the Supreme Personality of Godhead for the ability to carry out our service and be protected from false ego, pride, and misconceptions of who we are and what's going on. Always stay in that humble mood of service. This is a nice protection for that. Any comments or questions?
Regarding Lord Vishnu, expanding as Krishna, expanding as Vishnu, Brahma, and Shiva. So, everything is emanation of Krishna. But so here, the expansion means empowering a living entity is also called expansion, like Brahma.
The last part of your question was the critical part, and your voice trailed off, and I wasn't exactly sure what you said. So, is Brahma also, he's a guna avatar. Does that mean that he's also an expansion, is your question? Everything is an expansion. So is he also part of everything? Yes. His ability, his spiritual existence, is, you know, his fundamental existence, is dependent upon, is an expansion of the Personality of Godhead. The ability that he's decorated with, is the specific empowerment, is also. Okay? Yes?
Just following up on today's lecture, I fully understand what you're talking about. Perception is reality. This is what I'm battling it out in the world. What we see often get registered, and then I'm talking about myself, being and talking about myself. So that it becomes like a reality. In this process, it becomes a rat race.
It becomes a rat race.
Yeah. So because, you know, somewhere down the line you have to compromise the character. Especially, I often get into discussion with my colleagues.
Good.
People say, no, reality is outside. No, you're not doing this because you have to do this, because in order to really do well, you know, you have to do this. This is like a fixed formula. Why are you not doing this? You know, So how do we, you know, as you rightly said, focus, fix on your sadhana, but I just want to understand, is there a way, how to get out of this when I feel that I'm slowly, you know, getting into that perception, that is, even though I know it's not a reality, how do I distinguish and then...
Well, I can suggest, if, you know, there's many things, but I can suggest two right off the top. One is regular hearing, and that, you know, regular hearing in a qualitative way where you're genuinely, sincerely trying to understand the message, recognizing there's this conditioned tendency called filters that make us receive only certain portion of that message. So I'd like to, you know, Krishna, please help me go beyond my own conditioning and receive this message, and can stay in that space so that, you know, the fullness of the message can enter. So that's like purification and inoculation at the same time. So if you carry that with you into those circumstances where, you know, the onslaught of the conditioning influences are coming at you through colleagues and whatever else, you know, you have a, you're charged. You're clear. A second thing is, I haven't read this anywhere, it's just my experience, that a devotee, to be effective in school, this works, you know, for your children, as well as for adults, a devotee has to have a parallel intelligence. That is, you have tasks in front of you, and you need to accomplish those tasks that are in front of you, and a certain kind of intelligence is needed to know how to accomplish those tasks in front of you. There's another intelligence that's protective, and that is looking at the circumstance of people that are devoid of God consciousness and seeing it through the lens of Bhagavad Gita or through the lens of knowledge. Like, this is a very interesting manifestation of the mode of passion. You know, in a detached position. And knowledge, jnana, helps detachment. And detachment helps knowledge. You know, like seeing with knowledge. So your business in the workplace is not to compete with those people and be better at, you know, the rat race. And that's how you're going to be successful. You just got sucker punched. Come here. Boom! Oh! You're getting beat up by the material energy. And that's, you know, that's not a nice program. It's, material energy is a bully, and I'm not going to be, you know, get drawn into that being bullied program. I'm going to remain Krishna conscious, remain detached, and observe the behaviors of the material energy and living entities being moved by this mode, that mode combination, ignorance, passion, and maybe a tinge of goodness somewhere that disappears quickly. But see things through the eyes of Scripture. Detachment, we'll say it the other way around. Attachment completely covers one's capacity to see things. Detachment allows you to be in a situation where things are happening and you can be more discerning about what's happening and what to do. Well, someone that's attached. You know, when we're attached, we don't know it. Someone can say, you know, hey, you're attached. Like, you know, look at it in a different angle. Because we're attached. You know, it can be, you can see it when in others, you can see it perhaps in your children or in your wife, but when it's going on yourself, it's hard to see it. Because we're attached. And it colors, not only, as you said, how you see, but, you know, like, what you feel and what you do and how you behave. And we're like toys in the hand of material nature. The modes of nature are just tumbling us around, and we're tumbling. But detachment permits, you can see that activity, the modes of nature acting with some kind of detachment. And then from that detached, scripturally based, spiritually rooted, Guru Sadhu Shastra position, at least you can know what better was an appropriate action in this circumstance. That's the value of the knowledge, is proper action, serving Krishna properly. So that which I just described is strengthened by the first one, proper hearing and chanting. Then a natural kind of detachment that comes from a fullness of spiritual well-being and spiritual conception and spiritual empowerment from that hearing and chanting, then you can see with detachment, and then you can take more appropriate action. But you don't get sucked into the vortex of the material energy doing its thing. The spiritual empowerment, it's the fruit of proper hearing and chanting, and being well connected with those sources of that spiritual sound vibration. Because the Vedic process is not just information, as material, you know, information technology is information. You just get certain information and you can do stuff. And there's no relationship, there's no character, it's just like do stuff. That's not the Vedic process. The Vedic process is relationship based. It's just the Vedic process, and there's a reason for it. You know, it's ultimately the relationship with the personality of Godhead. And if you want to cut that relationship, then, you know, you're in the information space where there's no mooring, there's no shelter. There's no protection. The metaphor sometimes the Prabhupada would use, a Vedic metaphor, is this human form of life is like a sturdy boat to cross over the ocean. And the Vedic wisdom is like favorable breezes to carry the boat to the other side. But you also need a captain of the boat. You have good breezes in a sturdy boat, no captain, good luck. Who knows what's going to happen? When I visited Guyana, Anutsuma visited Guyana, but you probably didn't go to Essequibo. You stayed in Georgetown and Crane.
Yeah, two places.
Yeah, Georgetown and Crane.
Yeah, Crane.
So Essequibo, to get to Essequibo, you go from the Crane Temple on a car ride about 45 minutes to the Essequibo River, and you get in a boat, a speed boat, and you have to go in the morning, because if you don't go in the morning, the waves get too big. But even you go in the morning, the waves, it takes 45 minutes to 50 minutes speed boat speed to get to the other side of the river. It's a big river. You know, you see this piece of, first time I did it, the piece of land looked like you're at the other side already. That's just an island in the middle of this river. Anyway, it's like, so you think, boom, 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 boom. So, you know, I grew up on a lake and I'm used to riding in speedboats, but here's this, you know, everyone's got to have a safety jacket. And fortunately, they don't have many accidents because the people are expert. They know, like, they know when to go full speed and when to slow down, when it, you know, what angle to move at the wave so it doesn't like break the boat in half. Because it's wavy. You have to have an expert captain when you're crossing a river, you know, something like that. In the ocean of material existence, it requires qualified guidance. The Vedic wisdom is there, that's fine. You know, but it's not just information, it's connecting one into relationship with Krishna. And if I think, oh, I don't need, you know, I just go to Krishna, you know what Krishna says, that's not my devotee. He has a system. And there's a good reason for it. Because in the spiritual world, it's not, you know, like this student was saying, you know, if there's God, then it's just like God alone. It's God with living entities. And how does that work? How do we understand that? If we don't have some guidance, we have our material conceptions and look at it and it'll bounce. Like a ball off a rubber ball off a wall and just go flying somewhere. You won't accept it. It won't go in. We've got our conditioning. We've got our attitude towards Krishna problem. Anything else? Yes?
I have a question about this bringing the fluidity mentality into spiritual life. In the process of taking shelter of Krishna and its representatives, sometimes, I mean, most of the times, I feel I have the expectation or desire to have some intimacy or loving relationship. And I'm also getting to understand gradually that I'm having lots of preconceptions about what is a loving relationship also. So I'm, at this point, I'm just trying to understand at which point it becomes free of any fruitive tendency. I mean, how to understand when it is free of fruitive tendency in spiritual relationships.
Are you speaking of a spiritual relationship with Krishna or Krishna's devotees or both?
Krishna's representatives
and Krishna. Well, let's just do like a real simple one and say there's probably a mix. There's a sincere desire. That's just a sincere desire. And there's fruitive tendency. And there's a mix. Just like start from that. We're not pure devotees yet. When that wonderful day comes that we become pure devotees, there won't be a mix. Until that time, there's a mix. There's something that's genuine and something that's selfish. So starting from that base point, real self-interest is devoid of selfishness. And in that position of real self-interest, there's no interruption in devotional service. Here's like a rule of thumb. Maya is that which diminishes your enthusiasm for devotional service, and the internal potency is that which increases your enthusiasm for devotional service. So if you're finding that your enthusiasm for devotional service is being diminished, chalk one up for Maya. That's an indicator there's some expectation. Fruitive. Now, it doesn't, to say that doesn't mean like we become mush, or, you know, we have no intelligence, we're just, you know, kind of a amorphous glob, and just we get pushed this way, we get pushed that way, and we just flow because we're a glob. That's not the message. We have a will, we have personality, we have desire in relation to Krishna ultimately. So there's always, in relationships, there's always some give and take. Love and trust, give and take. In a relationship, there's always. If it's a loving relationship, that's there. So, in the beginning of devotional practice, like you're describing yourself, our capacity is limited. So, like a child in the family, they have their primary relationship with their parents. And in that situation, the child and the parents, you know, start with the husband and wife. They need to develop a loving relationship, and then with their children, a loving relationship, and then that can expand. but it starts in the unit of the family, and that intimacy of loving relationship, let it start there. And so, you know, start with a loving relationship with your husband. And what does that mean? You know, there's expectations. It comes back to the same question. So how do I have a loving relationship with my husband? And, you know, then you can expand that with others in the community and so on and so on. So that requires a lot of introspection, a lot of careful sadhana, and a lot of guidance. How to do that nicely. But, you know, let that be your focus initially. And then, you know, venture out that the children can have relationships aside from their parents with other parents, other friends of the family, and other relationships, and you can go out. But it starts within the family. That's nature's arrangement. And, you know, we're ill-equipped. We haven't been komara acharat pragyo dharman bhagavatan iha. We didn't go to Prahlad Maharaj's gurukul and get training from the tender age of childhood, or even before that, before school, or even before that, before conception. We didn't have that facility. So, you know, we have to begin somewhere. We begin where we with what we have to work with. And then make our best effort to continue that going forward, so that before you and your husband have children, you get those loving relationship things worked out, so that you can pass that on to your children and not, you know, just dump stuff that I haven't worked out yet to the children. That's responsible household life. So start with the most immediate relationships, and assume that there's don't put yourself down that there's something selfish. Just accept that this is the package that I've worked and developed. I'm working with it. Accept it, and take the process of purification seriously, and work towards the goal of pure devotional service, but be patient with yourself to work towards that goal, and with persons that are with proper sadhana, proper introspection, and that means application of what you've heard, and the guidance of others that can help you get there. And be very, the main qualification, Prabhupada teaches again and again, is our sincerity to do so. With those resources, you'll make the best progress. Yes?
Guru Maharaj, regarding the leadership mentality, like how Lord Brahma is praying to Lord Vishnu to protect him from ego, and you mentioned that humility is the one which protects us from leadership mentality.
Yeah.
And when whatever little services when I try to do, I try to remember the source that I'm speaking. Whatever I'm speaking is coming from somewhere else. I don't know what anything, but I'm repeating the superior's knowledge. So in that process, after doing the service or something, someone comes and says, "Oh, that's nice," and all that. So it's sometimes that leadership, "Oh, I did it," kind of thing kicks in sometimes. So how do I? So two things, Maharaj. One is, but I still remember that I repeat it. It's not.
But some of it sticks.
Yeah, but so two things. How do I check if I am in that leadership mentality? And second, what are some practical things that I can apply to actually feel that?
Okay, I want to go back and edit, if I may. That when you're doing your service, don't put yourself in the mistaken position of being a non-entity. You're not a tape player or a recording device that just plays back. You're a person. So, as a person, you're an instrument. You're simply passing on, but you're not a non-entity, a non-person. You're receiving and you're transmitting. But you're a person. And it's happening naturally that way. Anyway, you're expressing according to your own capacity, nature, and so on. But you're not the source of that which you're passing on. That's the key thing. But you're an instrument. Nimitta matram bhavyasavya sachin. Nimitta, you're an instrument. Person. Personal instrument of a person. Krishna. So fruit, it's you zeroed in very nicely to something because you're experiencing it and you're introspecting, you're watching. Here comes, you're doing some service as an instrument, and here comes some recognition and some praise. There's a little success in what you're doing, and people are now appreciating. And there's this enjoying spirit that says, yes, I did this very nicely. I can see there's an intelligent person in our group. They can appreciate that I did it very nicely. Yes, you're my friend. So, that's the enjoying spirit. And it's while trying to be the humble servant, the instrument of the disciplic succession, there's this other thing, this, like the previous, you know, something that's selfish, something that's for me. So there's no substitute for purity. Purity is going to protect you from that tendency. But so when that arises, or knowing that that thing is going to arise, be prepared. It's like, you know, you enter into a crossroads in traffic. They don't have these anymore. Yellow flashing light. But anyway, you're going to make a turn in a traffic area, and there's you know, cars moving. You're cautious because it's an accident prone area, so you're extra careful. Yes. So be extra careful when you're in that situation, when persons are offering some appreciation. And what do? You immediately you press the reset button that says your appreciation is very much, it's wonderful because it's just like exactly what Prabhupada did. You know, this is you're appreciating Srila Prabhupada. Because the message is Prabhupada's message. I'm the postal peon. Here's the message. It's got your name on it, and Krishna sent it. Just understand your function, the postal peon function. It's a nice phrase. Prabhupada used it. So it's in one sense, peon is a demeaning phrase. It's not just like humble, it's demeaning. Peon, insignificant. Think of yourself that way. But it's an honor to be the postal peon of Krishna's messages. It's an honor. I'm insignificant, but what's significant is the source. So it's an honor to be representing the source. And your praise goes to it just transparently goes right to the source. Thank you for this nice appreciation. But actually, it's the author. I'm just the postal peon. And then they'll say, no, but you expressed it so nicely. And, you know, however you want to express yourself, but your processor should be, where was I? You know, what's the qualification that I have? It's, if there's any qualification, somebody put that qualification. And so all glories to that person that put that qualification. It's by Prabhupada's message that I'm able to do anything. That empowerment is... So just, you know, practice that. It's something, a visual image for me is walking through a forest where there's no path. But sometimes you walk, I've had this experience, you walk through a forest and it looks like there was a path. But how did it become a path other than just a forest? Somebody moved up and down and up and down and up and down and up and down, and then it became a path, right? So just keep moving up and down and up and down that forested area, and it becomes a path, and it becomes very easy to move along that path. It just becomes like second nature. Keep your processor working when those situations, because you know it's, I have this tendency to like be the enjoyer of the fruits of my devotional service. Think yes. Just keep moving along that path. It may be awkward for you at first, like, you know, mechanical even, but keep moving along that path and it'll become second nature. It won't be, you know, something that, yes. Service. That's who we are. We're servants. And if the servant is praised, all glories to the master. Like Prabhupada's example of the ambassador that goes to the foreign country and he's received by the foreign country and they give him gifts. If he thinks that those gifts are his, he's in jail. It's to the country that he's representing because he's the ambassador. So if you're representing Krishna and Krishna's message and someone, you know, praises you or gives some, you know, honor and just something, that's the property of the person that you're representing. Otherwise, you know, you're in jail. It's dishonest. You're a criminal. So, you know, we don't want to be criminals. We want to be... So then stay in that consciousness. That's who I am. I'm representing. I'm the instrument of. I'm the humble servant of. I'm the servant. Anything else?
Maharaj, actually I have a question, but it's not very directly related to this verse. Is it okay?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Depends on how far off it is, though.
No, like when you are explaining this Bhagavad Gita verse about how Krishna is a non-doer, it just struck me like there is another verse like which talks about, like, I think Maya Tatam Idam Sarvam, where
yes.
It says like everything is within me, but I am not in.
Yes.
So everything is within me. That part I understood, but the other part.
The other part is that Krishna has his own separate existence. He's in Goloka Vrindavan, calling the cows, playing his flute, and wrestling with the cowherd boys, and you know, that's what he's doing. Mm-hmm. He has his own separate. Everything is in him, but you know, he's has his own existence. And whatever else is going on is but an expansion of his energies or under the direction of one of his personal expansions, like Super Soul.
Oh, okay.
Prabhupada's example, worldly example, so it has its limits because it's an example, but there's this industrialist who is off on the golf course hitting golf balls. You know, in the factory, thousands of workers and millions of dollars are going on only under his direction. Nothing happens except his direction. He's hitting golf balls on the golf course. So he's not, you know, with his sleeves rolled up and, you know, perspiring in the factory. But it's only going on under his direction. And Prabhupada's point is, if that's true for a worldly person, what to speak of God? Where factually everything that exists is His energy, and only under His direction. So, by His portion of a plenary portion expansion, there's Paramatma, and he is not directly contacting material nature, but through the agency of His willing, things happen, and Krishna is the source of Paramatma. And He's enjoying in Vrindavan. So that's the other part.
Thank you.
Anything? Okay. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.